Welcome back, dear students. Have you studied the first presentation's material and the course, so to speak, aspects, the most obvious and superficial aspects of the various types of investments? Good, because now we're going to get a little closer. Not too close, but we're going to spend some time and discuss the major investment alternatives and what we can reasonably expect from them in with regard to investment return, reward. We'll discuss a little bit of the risks involved, but in our next presentation is when we will discuss risk in detail. So are you ready? Are you excited? Remember, all you need to know and understand is what is in these presentations. That's it. Don't worry about all the details. We'll get to them later. So let's start on slide 15. Measuring investment return, or as we sometimes like to say, reward, or some people use the term performance. I don't really like that term, but reward. What are we going to get out of our investment? Why bother doing it in the first place? Well, it turns out that return is very straightforward to measure. We can measure it in two ways. The total dollar return of our investment, that's the return on an investment measured in dollars that account for all the cash flows, the capital gains or losses. But that's not as important as the total percent return. In other words, what are we returning as a percentage of our investment? Why? Because that allows us to compare the various investment alternatives. So the total percent return is defined as the return on investment measured as a percentage that accounts for all cash flows and capital gains or losses. Now, in chapter one, they go to great lengths to teach you how to compute this. You don't really have, I mean, eventually you're going to want to learn, but most of the time it's told to you. If you're using a mutual fund or a brokerage firm, they'll tell you. They have sophisticated algorithms that keep track. Now, when you start investing in more arcane or alternatives that many people don't invest in, then you're going to want to learn how to do your own return. And we'll discuss it later on, but we're not going to concentrate on that. So if you're reading through the book and you're thinking, oh, Biano, don't we have to go through? No. We just look it up. We're kind of that lazy that way. Now, what's the next step? What do we have to also think about when we think about all these different types of investments? Risk. Oh, why do you always have to bring up risk, Biano? Because it's important. And it's also difficult. It's difficult to measure. There are many ways to measure risk with regard to investments, but all of them are imperfect. Remember, we discussed the definition of risk? Things not turning out the way you thought they were going to turn out, which is not normally what we think of when we think of risk. We usually think of danger, right? Well, there's danger involved, especially when we start going into very high risk speculative. So how do we measure this? Well, one of the most popular measures is standard deviation. Oh, no, math. No, relax. Again, we don't bother computing it. It's done for us. This is a measure of the volatility of an investment, the variance. In any given year, there's about a 2/3 chance that the return of an investment will be within one standard deviation of the historical average return. This is starting to sound, relax, don't worry about it. In other words, we are going to measure how far away from what we expect to get is what we actually got. And it turns out that there's a distribution that we'll discuss in detail in the next presentation. But suffice to say for now, and this is what you got to remember, the higher the standard deviation, the more volatile the investment, the greater the variance from the norm. Again, we're not going to do any statistics, but if you've taken statistics, then you remember variance and standard deviation and all that stuff. And we'll use that. We won't compute it. We will use it. Slide 17. So let us now go look at the major investment alternatives, the overview of the investment universe. Again, we're only going to look at the surface. We're flying over the landscape at 40,000, 35,000 feet in a jumbo jet. And we're now going to just learn the most topical, superficial. I use the word course, C-O-A-R-S-E, because we're going to later on delve deeper and deeper and deeper. So if you can think, I don't know if the idea of an onion, the image of an onion peeling away the layers, we're just looking at the outside of the onion now. And these are the major investment alternatives. We'll take a look at each one in detail on its own slide. But equities, stocks, common stocks, fixed income securities, bonds, which are loans, short-term investments, also known as cash. Well, yeah, that's what they call it. It's not cash under your mattress, but they call these short-term investments cash. And then mutual funds, which the legal term, which I like a whole lot better, is investment company. Those are the big four that we're going to be spending most of our time on this semester. Then there are a few others that are popular with some people, not as many. Hybrid securities. They sort of live in both worlds of stocks and bonds. Preferred stocks, convertible securities. And then the others, real estate, physical investments, hard assets, collectibles, cars. For some people, these are, you know, actually very good investments. But they're a whole lot more trickier than the major four that we'll look at. And then the last group, derivatives, which we've already said we don't really want to even discuss in polite company, they are speculations. They are not investments, as Mr. Benjamin Graham would remind us. So let's look at each one in detail now. More detail, but not a whole lot of detail. And the first one on slide 18 is stocks, common stocks. That's kind of a silly name, and there's a reason why. But just know that when people discuss stocks, they're talking about common stocks. If they say preferred stocks, then they mean not common stocks. They mean preferred, and we'll take a look at preferred a little bit later. But we often just call these equities, which means we are owners. Stocks represent ownership in a corporation. Each share the shareholders in common own gives that shareholder one vote. And if you have 50% plus one of the shares, that means you basically call the shots, because you can vote in such a way as to take the company in whichever direction you want. But most of the companies that we think of, there's nobody who owns more than 50% of the shares. They're just too darn large. What do investors receive? Why buy stocks? Well, the one thing that people don't think about often are the dividends. These are optional payments to shareholders. You can think of them like interest payments, but they're not. They're legally very different, and they are optional, where interest payments usually are not optional. The one thing that people do concentrate on are capital gains. Is the stock price going to go up? Well, let's hope. If the company does well, it should go up. No guarantees. So both of these are optional. And then the third, which if you've taken Business 120 Introduction to Business, you've learned about, and that is the limited liability characteristic of stocks. Yes, we are part owners, but we are only on the hook for our investment. So if we bought one share at $100 and the company goes bankrupt, no matter how many debts the company has, we can only lose our $100. They can't come back to us and say, hey, you got to pony up more money because the company has debts. That is very different than if you have a sole proprietorship, if you're a small business owner, or you're in a partnership. And again, you would learn much more about this in an introduction to business class and then in the business law class. Yes. So it's something we should remember, but it just comes with the territory. Now, what kind of risk can we expect from stocks? Well, some of them are moderate risk. Remember Nestle. But some of them are high risk. Remember Qualcomm. And some of them are downright speculative, which Mr. Benjamin Graham would say, that's not an investment. And we don't use the term risk usually when we talk. We say, yeah, that stock is risky. But we'll often use the term volatility. Oh, yeah, that stock's been volatile. How was that stock you bought, Frank? Well, it's been volatile. What does it mean? He bought it for $11.88 and he sold it for 30 cents. Do you know anybody who's done that? I know somebody who's done that. I've known him all my life. He's kind of a goofy kind of guy, teaches finance and investments at Southwest. It was a great company, folks. It was based here in San Diego and they were doing fabulous. And then something completely out of the blue hit him like a ton of bricks. And then they got hit again and he held on. And anyway, so yes, stocks can make us very happy, and they will over time if we are patient and diversify. But there's going to be times when they're going to make us sad. Yeah. But historically, they've been the best, they've given the best returns over time. And it turns out that if we have a long-term investment, a time horizon, investment time horizon, if we look at it long-term and the world doesn't end, we should be able to reasonably get 8, 9, 10%, maybe even 11 or 12. Some have done better, but we should consider this a long-term investment. And so let's see what the 2008 definition was. Stocks are equity investment instruments designed to lose value. There's going to be times, folks, we don't know how many, we don't know when, but during your investment career when stocks plummet. Witness the beginning of 2020 when the COVID hit. And I don't know if you remember a couple years ago in 2018, Christmas Eve of all days, the stock market fell 7% or something like that. Hoo-wee! But again, if we take a long-term perspective and the world gets better and better, the economy around the world does well, not only do we bleeding heart liberals become happy because more people are having food, clothing, and shelter, but also we hard nailed capitalists do better because those people are now buying shoes and toothpaste and cell phones and diapers. Yeah, the news is good, as we shall see. Now, slide number 19, the second major type are bonds. And you'll hear people use the term fixed investments or fixed income securities or fixed rate investments. They are loans. You get to play the part of the bank and you get to lend your money to corporations, corporate bonds, state and local governments, municipal bonds, and the granddaddy of them all, the federal government, treasury bonds. Bond investors lend their money to the bond issuers. That's how it works, folks. And then the bond investors receive interest and a promise to repay the loan when the bond is due. That's how we built that stadium, folks. We didn't hold a bank sale. We sold bonds. We basically borrowed money from investors all around the country, around the world too, but mostly municipal bonds are bought by domestic, and there's a reason why we'll discuss that later, why they're very popular. But treasury bonds are bought by people all over the world. Other countries love to buy United States treasury bonds. Why? Because they know that the United States is not a banana republic that where people storm the Capitol. Well, yes, we've gotten a black eye, but it's going to get better. Please, yes. Anyway, historically, bonds have been much less risky than stocks. That doesn't mean there's not risk involved. There is, but the risk is far less than stocks. And so what do we expect with return with regard to reward? Yes, dear students, you're going to get far less reward. Now, right now, bonds are paying very little in terms of interest, but that will change, I think, as things get better. I hope so, but we'll see. Over the long term, we've gotten 2 to 5% from government muni bonds and 4 to 6% times sometimes more from corporate bonds. And why is that? Well, doesn't it make sense? You're starting to get the relationship. Governments and states and local governments are far less risky, far less, they're not going to go out of business. Sometimes they go bankrupt. It's very, very rare. They're far less risky than corporations, which routinely go through bankruptcies, and not all, but many of them do. And sometimes those bonds become worth less than what you paid for them. Sometimes they become worthless, but that's very rare. People usually get maybe 50 cents or 80 cents or in very bad situations, 20 cents on the dollar. But still, they're far less risky than stocks. They are good intermediate term and long-term investments. And let's see the 2008 definition. Bonds are fixed rate investment instruments designed to lose value. Wait a minute. We knew the stock market went down in 2008 because the economy was crumbling. Why did bonds go down? Well, because bond investors believed that many of the bonds that they were holding were going to go into default. So they sold those bonds. Remember, they're securities. They can be traded and sold to other individuals. They sold those bonds at a discount just to get them out of the home, get them out of their portfolio, get them out of their household or their whatever, you know, their investment portfolio. And so, as we'll see, people who bought those bonds when everybody else was screaming and shouting and yelling and afraid and running, the world was going to end, they actually did pretty well. You see, crises can be good for you. Yes, we're going to deal with the emotions. We're going to deal with the emotions. We're going to learn how to deal with them. Take a long-term view and realize that if the world ends, it doesn't matter where your money is. Slide number 20, short-term investments. Now, the book doesn't really do a very good job with these. So if you're using the book, you might not even find where they talk about them. But they're not that many to deal with, and we'll go through them very quickly in this first chapter. A couple more presentations we'll discuss short-term investments in detail and then get them out of the way. As we said, we sometimes call these things cash, euphemistically refer to them as cash. Short-term investments. We think of short-term investments usually up to a year, although some people, you know, 1 or 2, 3 years, depending on the importance of the money that we're holding, parking, a down payment on a home, right, or college. They're usually guaranteed or pretty darn close, and they're very liquid. What does that mean? That means you can get the money right away. Some of them let you just write a check or just electronically move the money into your checking account. There's a very low risk of losing principal, almost no risk. Huh? Why are you getting it? Huh? Hence, very low reward. Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? These will help you sleep well. But you're not going to get very much money. In fact, right now, they're paying almost nothing. Almost nothing. Oh, my goodness. Why is that? Well, we'll discuss that in more detail when we discuss these at the end of Chapter 1. We like to say that these instruments are a place to park your money. You use short-term investments, cash to park money that you need for an important upcoming event, or an emergency fund. And we'll discuss the emergency fund that financial talking heads on the television and the internet say, you have to have an emergency fund. Well, all right, we'll talk about that. What's the 2008 definition? Short-term investments are instruments designed to accept what remains of investors' money after they've given up on stocks and bonds. Yes, that is the worst thing to do, dear students. When the markets fall, many people panic, pull their money out of stocks and sometimes even bonds, and put it into short-term investments. That's the time when you should be buying, right? But we're not rational beings. We're driven by emotions, and that's part of what we're going to learn in this semester: how to think past the disaster, and realize that if the world have I said this before? If the world ends, it doesn't matter where your money is. But if the world doesn't end, I, as I said, am very optimistic about the next 20, 30, 40 years. The world is going to change in ways we can hardly imagine now. Think about 20, 30 years ago. My goodness, what has happened? Yes. So don't give up. But if you need the money soon, this is money you need for college, for living off of, or for a car, or for a down payment on a house. Yes, you have no choice. You gotta put it in someplace like this because you don't want it to drop 20% in one day. It's happened in the past. It's going to happen in the future. I don't know when, but it's going to happen. Slide number 21. Here's some examples, and we'll discuss these all in detail in our, not the next presentation, but the fourth presentation of this chapter when we deal with short-term investments and just get them out of the way. Savings accounts, savings bonds, treasury bills, certificates of deposits, money market accounts and money market mutual funds, and then commercial paper. What a silly name. Banker's acceptance notes. So more later. Slide 22, mutual funds. Now, you can't help but see advertisements all the time on the television, and if you go on any of the investing websites, you'll see advertisements for mutual funds. Well, what are they? Well, you know, I like the legal term a whole lot better. If I were king of the world, which I'm not, I would just say, get rid of this term, get rid of mutual fund, and now just use the term investment company, but no one's going to listen to me. This is a company that pools investors' money and invests in a diversified portfolio of securities. That's why they call it a mutual fund. Indeed. However, I like the term investment company because it tells you what it's doing. They're taking your money and they're investing it on your behalf. And investors get two wonderful attributes that we will discuss in detail in our next chapter on mutual funds: diversification and professional money management. Is diversification a good thing? Yes, dear students. There may be a few people out there that tell you, oh, no, I don't diversify. I want to concentrate. That's fine. We wish them much success, but it's not what we prudent long-term investors would choose if we had our druthers, in my humble opinion, remembering that there's chocolate and vanilla and some people like strawberry. So we get instant diversification. Our $50, $100 that we put into the mutual fund buys 25 cents of Apple and 30 cents of GM and 50 cents of Nike. Cool. And we don't have to deal with this. You know, we don't have to decide what to buy and how to buy it, or they do it for us. And who does it? The professional money managers. And these people are paid tons of money, folks, so don't feel too badly for them, but it's a very stressful job. Mutual funds are an immensely popular form of investment. Why? For many reasons, not the least of which is 401ks, 403bs, retirement plans at employers, employer-sponsored retirement plans, as they're called. They range from very low risk to extremely speculative risk. And what was the 2008 definition? Yeah, them too. Some did better than others, but yeah, some of them crashed and burned and fell down into the porcelain oasis. Slide 23. You like this? You're not going to see too many graphics in my presentations. Why? because I think they get in the way, usually, not always, sometimes they're very useful. Plus, I'm not a very good graphic artist. I made this slide. Aren't you proud of me? I am so proud of you. I'm really good at those stick figures. Here we are. We're the little people, and more of them are women. And we give our money to the people in the top hats. And luckily, more and more of them are women. And these are the professional money managers. These are the people who invest on your behalf. And there are millions of us giving $50, $100 every month through our paycheck, through our checking accounts. And so these people create a huge pool of money. I know it looks like a potato, my apologies, but it's really, it's supposed to be a pool. And there's billions of dollars in these pools. So these professional money managers then buy stocks. And if they buy stocks, it's called a stock mutual fund. Isn't that tricky how that works? If they buy bonds, it's called a bond mutual fund. If they buy the short-term cash investments that we discussed, then it's called a money market mutual fund. But usually you don't hear people say money market mutual fund. They just say money market. Yeah. And then we begin to see the various innumerable flavors and combinations and permutations of mutual funds. We see that there are mutual funds that invest both in stocks and bonds, and they are called balanced mutual funds, which in my humble opinion are some of the best inventions the world has ever seen. A balanced mutual fund for the majority of people who want to eat well and sleep well. But we'll discuss these in detail in our next chapter. This is all you have to know, what we see in this presentation. Cool? Okay. So now, those were the big four. Stocks, bonds, cash, and mutual funds. Now let's take a look at some of the more unusual and offbeat and alternative investments. And these are called hybrid investments, because the idea is we're mixing both worlds, stocks and bonds. There are two major types of hybrid investments that you'll hear about: preferred stock and convertible securities, both convertible bonds and convertible preferred stock. Now, doesn't it sound like you want preferred stock as opposed to common stock, which we saw in a few slides before? The answer, short answer, is no. No, most of us retail investors, most of us little guys and gals, are not really interested in preferred stock, although there are some people who will be. The cool thing about preferred stock is it represents ownership in a corporation, but the dividends are not considered optional. Whereas common stock, the company could stop at any time. They've been paying dividends for 15 years, 50 years, 100 years. They could next quarter, they could say, no more, we're not paying dividends anymore. Whereas preferred stock normally has to continue paying the dividends. Although it's a stock, they don't have to pay them, but it's basically implicit. I mean, obviously, if things go really, really badly for the company, they'll have to stop paying because they won't have the cash. But that's typically not what happens. And then there are securities, bonds, and preferred stocks that can be converted into common stocks, which again, convertible, kind of like a convertible car, the wind blowing through your hair. Sounds exciting. No, they're really not that exciting. But this is all you need to know, is that hybrid investments are designed to offer the stability of fixed income investments, which is what bonds give us, and the opportunity for capital growth of equity investments, which is what stocks give us. So the idea is to give us the best of both worlds. But guess what? There's no such thing as a free lunch. So they give us the advantages of bonds and stocks, and they give us the disadvantages of bonds and stocks. So in my humble opinion, why not just invest in stocks and invest in bonds and don't even bother with hybrid investments? But that's my opinion, and we'll discuss these later on in detail, much later on after we've dealt with the big four, okay? But this is all you have to know, what's in this presentation right here for now. Slide number 25, other popular investments, which for the most individuals, we're just not going to do. Real estate, as we said, real estate can be very profitable, but it is incredibly tricky. we call it the PETA factor, and we'll come back to the PETA factor later on. Tangible assets, gold, precious metals, jewelry, art, collectibles, cars, Beanie Babies, baseball cards. No. Sometimes you may be a big fan of comic books, and it becomes a worthwhile and enjoyable hobby. And then you find that one comic book that you know is worth tens of thousands of dollars, and somebody's selling it in their backyard, but that don't count on it, all right? Yeah, don't count on it. It might be a great hobby, but probably not a very good investment vehicle. Tax advantage investments, oil and gas limited partnerships, low-income housing projects. No, folks, for the vast majority of us, no. We'll look at some or all these, especially real estate, towards the end of the semester. But by the way, none of these were spared in 2008 either. Real estate was creamed. I mean, real estate got hammered. And part of that was because of the bubble in real estate that was in both sides, the left and the right coast, but not so much in the middle of the country. But in the coasts got really hit hard. So none of these were spared in 2008. Oil, oh my goodness, what happened to oil? And it hit $147 a barrel in the summer of 2008. And by the end of 2008, it was down to $39 a barrel. Yeah, ouch. Slide number 26, derivatives. We've already disparaged these alternatives, and we're going to continue to disparage them. They are speculative securities. We shouldn't even call them investments. They derive their value from an underlying security or asset. What? That's why they're called derivatives. Their value comes from something else. And don't worry about all the details, folks, but for now, all you have to know is that's how they work. They are not the asset. They derive their value from another asset. And the two major types, although there are many, are options and futures. Actually, the term is options contracts, and the other term is futures contracts. But try saying options contracts three times fast. And again, as we said in the book, they try to get you in the beginning of the semester to learn how to use these things, and that's just wrong, in my humble opinion. Many in the financial world, myself included, do not categorize these as investments. We will go over them in detail, as much detail as you need to know, at the end of the semester, enough detail to hopefully convince you that you should stay far away from these things. But who knows? You might be kind of the person who likes to go to Las Vegas, and if you lose $200, oh, a big deal. Well, that's the kind of world you're in when you're in the world of options and futures. Although you could lose a whole lot more. The derivative speculators did not feel so all alone in 2008. Usually, they're the only ones who are proud to have only lost 30%. If you lost 30% in 2008, you were doing all right. And if the derivative investors, or speculators, we should say, lost only 30%, they would be, hey, we did pretty good this year. But they do that every year. Or every month or every day. No thank you. But this is all you have to know. I think I have. All you have to know is what are on these slides. Cool? All right. So, slide 27. What are our emphases in this class? What are we going to concentrate on? Equities, stocks, where you're an owner. Fixed income securities, bonds, where you're a loaner. Cash, short-term investments, where your principal is safe, usually often guaranteed. And then mutual fund companies, where the investing is done on your behalf. For the vast majority of us investors, these are the most popular, these are the most important financial options, investments, alternatives. Okay? And we're going to spend in the first 12 weeks or so just on these. Okay? Okay. So remember, all you need to know is what we've discussed in this presentation. And now it's time for some checking for comprehension. These next few slides are going to look similar to what you will see on the exam. Okay, there'll be true, false, multiple choice questions. There will also be short essay and not in the first exam, but eventually there'll be calculations to be done with a 99-cent calculator. And so this gives you an opportunity to see what my questions on the exams that I create look like. I do not try to trick you. That is one thing I don't, unless I say, now here's a tricky question, and it's usually a bonus question of some sorts. But most all the questions are, if you're a baseball fan, I try my best to throw strikes just straight down the middle. I don't try to throw a curveball at you, unless I tell you, warn you ahead of time, hey, here comes a curveball. What are investment companies that pool investors' money and invest in a diversified portfolio of securities? Investors get diversification and professional money management. What are these? Short-term securities, common stocks, bonds, or mutual funds? They are mutual funds. The mutual fund is the popular term, but investment company is the legal term. And so I hope you remember that. Although, realize that you're not going to hear that unless you work in the industry. When and if you work in the industry, you're going to hear investment company. But most of the time, you're just going to hear mutual fund. Oh, by the way, these checking for comprehension slides, in the face-to-face class, we give out these little ABCD cards, and the students hold them up because we don't have the resources San Diego State has, where all you do is press a button in your seat, and on the overhead projector, it shows up how many people picked A, how many people picked B, C, or D. So that's pretty cool, but we don't have that kind of cash, okay? We get our little ABCD cards. But you're not in the classroom, so you're looking at this is a different world. We must adapt. Slide 29. What are investments that represent ownership in a corporation? Part owner. The investments receive optional dividends and capital gains or capital losses. Hybrid securities, common stocks, bonds, short-term securities. These are common stocks. When people use the term stocks, they are 99.99% of the time, unless they know that you're talking about preferred stock, they're talking about common stocks. So when people use the term stocks, they mean common stocks as opposed to preferred. If they use the term preferred stock, that means they're talking about preferred stocks. What are investments with very little risk and correspondingly very little return, often used as a place to park your money or for an emergency fund of 6 to 9 months' income? Are these hybrid securities, common stocks, bonds, or short-term securities? Right, short-term securities, often called cash. Oops, that's a mistake. I gotta fix that. It's supposed to be D. Low risk, low return. We're not gonna eat very well, but we will sleep very well. So I'll fix that, my apologies. And now, slide number 31. What are fixed income securities that represent loans to corporations, municipalities, state and local governments, and agencies, the federal government, treasury? Investors receive interest and a promise to repay the loan. And that interest is mandatory. If they don't pay the interest, they are in default. What are these? Hybrid securities, common stocks, bonds, or short-term securities? Right, they are bonds. Bonds are fixed income investments. We know how much money we're going to get. Whereas stocks are open-ended. We don't know. Yeah, we don't know. Slide number 32. What are securities designed to offer the stability of fixed income investments with the opportunity for capital growth of equity investments? Examples include preferred stock and convertible bonds. These are hybrid securities. The best and the worst of both worlds. The advantages of bonds and stocks and the disadvantages of bonds and stocks. So, as we said, these are usually not for the vast majority of us retail investors. And we'll discuss why much later on. Now, what are speculative securities that derive their value from an underlying security or asset? Examples include options contracts and futures contracts. You know what they are. Derivatives. They derive their value. You can make a lot of money. You can lose a lot of money and probably will lose a lot of money. And as we said, many of us in the investment world do not consider these investments. We consider these speculations, which is a fancy word for gambling. And then our final slide for today. What are reasonable expectations? What are reasonable long-term expectations from returns from the of returns from the following investments? What can we reasonably expect from stocks, bonds, short-term securities, mutual funds, hybrids, and derivatives? Well, when you talk to people, I usually say 8, 9, 10%. Even though we're going to see that some stocks have done a whole lot better. So we could expect 8 to 10%. If we get more than that, gracias a Dios. we give thanks. But if I get 8%, I'm happy. 9%, I'm really happy. Bonds, bonds, bonds. What do we expect? Well, 2 to 6. Now they're paying even less, 1 to 4 or so. But things will get better. And as they do, the demand for money will get more. And then the interest rates will go up. And so we bond investors will do better than what we're getting right now, which is not much. And then short-term securities, well, they used to give more than 3%. Now it's hard to find more than 1%, as we'll see in our next presentation. Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? Now, mutual funds, we don't know. Why? Because the mutual fund invests in something else, in the stocks, in the bonds, in the short-term securities. And if we have a mutual fund that invests in stocks, we should hopefully get 8, 9, 10%. Bonds, 2 to 5%. Short-term securities, yes. We should mirror the investments that the mutual fund is investing in. And what about hybrid securities? Again, oops, that was not supposed to happen. I guess I hit the button twice, I guess, or maybe I just have to go fix it. Hybrid securities, again, depends, you know, how well they do. But again, they're going to be somewhere between bonds and stocks over the long term because they have the advantages of stocks and the disadvantages of stocks and the advantages of bonds and the disadvantages of bonds. Now, derivatives, it's minus something. That was supposed to be the last little gotcha little joke there. Because when you start playing in derivatives, folks, just expect to lose a lot of money. So my humble opinion, stay far away from these things, please. I'll have more chances to scare you later on. So, investing is simple, isn't it? But it ain't easy, right? This material's not that difficult, dear students, in my humble opinion. I mean, you have to study. Don't get me wrong. You can't just, some people can look at it once and they know it and they'll never forget it. And I envy them, but I'm not one of them. And most likely you're not one of them because it's only about 1/10, 10% of the population. Some populations it's more, some populations it's less. So you're going to study. Study these, create flashcards, make your own little outlines or whatever. Because this is what you have to know. So that if I called you up in the middle of the night, 2 a.m., and I said to you, what are mutual funds? You could say, they're investment vehicles that pool investors' money and investors get diversification and professional money management. That's how much you have to be able to just off the top of your head. And so, what I'm going to ask you to do, I'll tell you right off the bat, and the exam is I'm going to ask you to give a 2 or 3 sentence description of each as if you were talking to somebody who was completely new to investing. How would you introduce them to the topic of mutual funds or stocks or bonds without getting into much detail at all? Just so that they know what they are at the onion at the outer level, outer layer of the onion. Does that make any sense? I hope so. Are you excited? Oh boy, I am. I'm so proud of you. All of us at Southwestern are proud and happy and honored and grateful that you're with us. And we want to make this the best class you've ever taken. And so, study hard, bring honor and glory to your family, to Southwestern Community College. And in our next presentation, dear students, oh boy, are we going to have fun? Because we're going to encapsulate the entire semester into one presentation and ask ourselves, do we want to eat well or do we want to sleep well? The eternal struggle between risk and return. See you in our next most important presentation, dear students.